The Mystery of the Lost Lenore, Part 45. I don't know if you have ever suffered from sunstroke, but let me assure you that it is not as hilarious as it sounds. The Collins English Dictionary, which happens to be the one I am holding in my hand, states that sunstroke is a condition caused by spending too much time exposed to intensely hot sunlight and producing high fever and sometimes loss of consciousness. This particular elucidation of sunstroke omits mention of the fact that this high fever can produce fairly severe delusions and lapses in judgment that may or may not result in one's charging off from one's companions in a paranoid frenzy, falling off one's camel, and lying in the bush in a semi-conscious and fairly crazed state. But trust me, this is a distinct possibility. But perhaps I'm getting ahead of myself again, and you. We were riding along, Freddy Bananas and I, once again at the rear of our little column, through the savannah northwest of the Balamban village of Kabara, heading towards the desert, on the other side of which lay, supposedly, the lost city of Lenore, and all seemed to be going relatively well. I was feeling fine, if a bit hot. I had decided to keep on my trusty fur hat, so as to protect me somewhat from the intense sun. There were no trees about, and therefore no shade, but I really didn't think the heat was that bad. But it was midday, and the sun was, as I can see in hindsight, fairly intense. Mr. Freddy Bananas III also had on his little hat, but his was white and cotton, and no doubt keeping him cool. Mine was dark and fur and, well, just a really bad choice for so many reasons. But I liked it, and I didn't want to take it off. Somewhere along the way, I began to realize that the others were plotting against me. Clearly, they did not want me to be part of their discovery, and they were leading me away from the lost city, so they wouldn't have to share the glory. At some point, they would take off and abandon me, leaving me to the vultures or hyenas or jackals or whatever it was that devoured lost travelers in those parts. But they didn't realize that I was on to them. I knew that my only chance for survival was to make a break for it and get away from the rest, putting as much distance as possible between me and them. Of course, I see now that my plan made no sense whatever, but at the time, this is what I was thinking. I was not at all suspicious of my simian passenger. In fact, quite the contrary, I came to the conclusion that he was my only true friend, perhaps the only real friend I had ever had, and that he was also in grave danger. I knew that I must save him, as well, from the evil machinations of the others. It was to this end that I suddenly spurred my camel and darted off in a more or less easterly direction, shouting, "You won't get me, you foul plotting dogs," or some such thing, at the top of my lungs. My confused companions, not really understanding what was happening, took off after me. This served to fuel my paranoia, and I urged my surprised camel on at top speed. Evidently, though, I was not holding on quite as tight as I thought, as I very shortly fell off, whacking my head and making myself just that little bit goofier. Freddy B., I later learned, had remained firmly seated on the camel as it charged east, and it took Hobie, who was tasked with corralling them, some time to catch up. Roger and Alvy rode back and forth across the savannah looking for me. I had fallen off in the midst of some very tall grass, and they were unsure where exactly to look. As it turned out, I was not that near to where they were searching, and it was not by my friends that I was finally discovered.